Welcome to the Enlighten Up Podcast, where I am going to take you into a deep exploration of what it means to exist in this current reality. We are going to raise your vibes, open your mind, expand your heart, and dive deep into the wondrous mysteries and possibilities of this lifetime. There's been a spiritual catalyst that has set in motion the awakening process of many across the globe to return to the knowingness of self and unite what has been separated. Together, we're going to bring light into that darkness. We're going to remember the joy of living. But most of all, we're going to turn up the volume of our own eternal power and do the thing we're here to do. Welcome back to the Enlighten Up Podcast. Thank you for being so patient with me. I was unable to deliver you guys an episode last week because of some technical issues well beyond my control. But I am excited today to bring a very special guest on who I want to introduce you guys to her. But before I do, I just want to let you guys know that for those of you who are interested, I am holding my webinar on how to raise your frequency so high that you maintain energetic sovereignty. I will be teaching you guys how I transmuted the vaccine and how to work with it in manifestation, all things manifestation. This is not just about health or anything like that. This is just about really becoming energetically sovereign and empowered and how you can use that to attract and create the reality that you truly deserve and want for yourself. So link for that is in the description below. It'll be Saturday, January the 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And I will be recording it. So if you can't make the live, you will be able to access the recording once it's done. And so without further ado, let me introduce you to the lovely Amy Hines. She fought through hell to crawl out of pain so deep that she truly wanted to die. Yet she learned how to find an unexpected anchor of joy in this journey as it continues to unfold. She is a veteran, an advocate, and her grandmother always tells her that Amy, you sure do have a way with words. Amy, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much for this. And that's a fact. My grandmother, I saw her over Christmas and that hasn't changed. She just kind of rolls her eyes and smiles and just recognizes it's just how it is. It's just how it comes out. So buckle in.
That's so awesome. Well, for all of you, Amy and I met through an event, and I met her last October, and just, you know, we had decided to go out for drinks, and listening to her story, I just was so impressed. I'm like, my audience needs to hear this, because I just feel like 2022 is going to be a pivotal year for those of us who are really ready to move into, let's just call it, a more empowered state of being, taking all of the experiences that we've learned from and activate them and actualize them into our purpose. And those of us who are really ready to focus on that, I think there's a great opportunity this year because we've kind of been through a little bit of hell the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's been rough. And I think it's time to take, I think the pandemic was a really good opportunity if people were willing to take it, to sit with ourselves and to address some things that we've just been too busy or unwilling to address. And then we hit this moment where we have to sit with ourselves and it gets kind of uncomfortable. And I think we all saw this in the people around us, that there were people that just were freaking out and panicking about it. But for those of us that are ready to do that kind of work, it was more than time. And it was, in some ways, there were moments of welcome reprieve to just continue to do the work in private. Because this work is hard. This is very, very hard work. The deconstructing and the rebuilding of ourselves is something that take some time and to be able to do it in privacy is kind of a sacred thing, actually. So, yeah.
It's a very sacred thing, and it's absolutely necessary. I don't think you want to be doing that in front of everyone around you in your life or in public eye of any way, at least not initially. It's very sacred because it's a true deep journey within, and it requires a lot of vulnerability. It requires a lot of honesty. And in order to be able to do that, you can't really have too many outside influences affecting that journey.
Right. Well, and I think during that time frame too, you know, everybody, they got lonely and they wanted to get into a relationship. And I feel like for some people, the people that really need to do the work, that's the worst thing that they could have done. There's some of this work that you can't do in relationship, but on the flip side, you also need a community. You need people that will keep you accountable. You need people to plug in with. And I think that's super important. And now that people are getting back out there, hopefully they're going to evaluate, okay, what does my community look like? And are they pushing me and challenging me? And do they understand the difference between good pain and bad pain? You know, like when yes. you're going through change and you're trying to push through something, you're trying to do something difficult, it's very important to understand this is good pain. This is helping me. This is growth. It's like going to the gym and you break down your muscles and you put them back to, you know, they heal properly. And they're more robust. But the bad pain is, hey, if I keep going on this path, I'm going to break something. And I certainly had that experience a few years back where I absolutely broke more than one thing. I ended up in the ER and we thought I was having seizures and a heart attack and all of those things. And it was because I had been the impervious freight train for pretty much my entire life. And the worst thing that I had said over myself was, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. I was always fine. Everything that happened, I could always take it. And I was fine, fine, fine. And I was not fine, but I was outrunning it for a certain amount of time. And this analogy has really served me well. We figured out I wasn't having a heart attack. I wasn't having seizures. It was stress. It was the stress that I had been carrying as this freight train for all of these years. And then I decided about 2 years prior to that to a year and a half prior to that, to slow it down, to recalibrate, to stop outrunning it and do the work and sit with myself and all of that sort of thing. So I was good for like a year. And then all of a sudden this hit and just plowed me over. I'm like, what happened? I've been making good choices. I've been making healthier choices, all these things. And now if you think about the way a freight train works and the physics of a freight train, it'll go, 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 go. But when that engine stops, what happens with everything else behind it? That stuff still has momentum. That stuff's going to keep going until that energy clears that. And that was the clearance point for me. And it was really scary, but it was also, I think, kind of a weird sort of confirmation that recalibrating yeah. my life and doing the work and uh-huh. sitting with myself and asking the good questions and not looking for myself outside everywhere else, but inside and really having some really tough talks with God where he loved on me very, very well. That was the right answer for sure. And I'm so grateful it happened.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about this because I think this is a beautiful analogy. I love this. We're calling this the impervious freight train episode because people really need to understand this on the healing journey and the self-discovery journey because it's very true what you said. When we start to really kind of take the time to go in deeper and maybe slow things down. I totally relate to your story. One of those go, 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 never stop, you know, just keep going forward. And you're right. The rest of the train is ultimately all of the past traumas or all of the past experiences, beliefs, all that, the masks that we wear, all that stuff that is not wanting to stay with us anymore. It's ready to be cleared out. It's going to come and hit you, but it won't hit you when you first stop. Some stuff will hit you.
Right.
The first few carts behind yeah. you will hit you, but there's more.
And you're like, ooh, that wasn't too bad. I got through it. And then a year later, you're like, holy cow, what was that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be ready.
Yeah. And some of the really heavy loaded stuff can be at the back in the caboose, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I had a lot of cars. They were full. I think that's why it all happened. And this was in some ways too, like I've gone through my life and I prided myself in being a person that could not only take a lot, but I could process a lot of things. Well, I mistook my organizational skills for processing. So instead, I had all these little boxes around. And I'm just like, oh, that goes in that box, and that goes in that box, and that goes. My boxes were full, girl. Like, the boxes were freaking full, and they were in the train. They weren't processed. I just stored them in a very organized manner.
Yeah.
So I ran out of boxes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to finally bring all that stuff out. It was ugly, but so worth it.
Okay, so take us through from the very beginning here where you thought life was going just the way you thought it was supposed to. Like, how were you feeling? I guess let's just back that up even a little bit more. How were you feeling still in the heat of it all? Like, of like going, moving, like, were you starting to feel any kind of fracture within yourself of realizing something's not right here? I'm not happy. Or did it just kind of hit you out of the blue?
So I think the easiest way to answer that question, forgive me, I'm going to back it up a little bit and tell a little bit of my story. So I got married when I was young, and I was 22 years old, and that was more out of survival. And then after that, I ended up going in the Army. That was basically my second act of rebellion. And from there, I really kind of, the me that was too dangerous to survive my childhood actually thrived in the Army. She did really well there. And when I lost that career due to injuries, I was devastated because I finally just had the opportunity to kind of come out of my shell and find this person and be comfortable. And nobody was threatened by her. She fit into that mold because that made me a good officer. And so when I lost that, my marriage actually became, and I shouldn't have gotten married in the first place, but this was the thing that created a casualty for my marriage. So from there, after I got divorced, I was completely wrecked. I just felt like I failed. And also in the process, I felt like I lost these parts of myself that I had worked so hard that I kind of stumbled upon. And now they're gone and I didn't know how to get back to that. So I started dating recklessly, like a punishment. It was incredible.
I done the same thing. I know what you're talking about. Right.
You're like, I'm just going to, and it's like, I'm trying to gain control. I'm trying to get my power back. And I'm trying to get my bearings, and I just called it a social experiment. Well, let me tell you, when you are on the verge of becoming an escort and you're like, you know, maybe I should kind of look at my life choices here, because I'm right on the cusp of, if I go this way, there's a pretty clear direction of where it's going to go. It's not going to be good. I'm having a great deal of fun, but it's because I'm operating at warp speed. But if I go this way, this is unknown to me. This is unfamiliar. This would probably be more healthy, but it is very scary, because what I understand more than anything in my life is I understand the familiar cycle of dysfunction. And so I would keep choosing it because it was familiar, not because it was good for me, but it was just the only thing that I knew. And what was more scary was the unknown. Even though I knew it'd probably be better for me, it was very scary. So while I'm operating at this pace, I am helping other people and I'm showing up for other people and I'm putting, my output is tremendous. Both healthy and unhealthy. But what my pattern would be is that I would put out so much, then I would collapse. So it was this constant roadrunner principle. I would run, I would hit the wall, I would collapse for 3-4 days. I would just pick back up and I'd run and hit the wall and collapse for 3-4 days. And I would do that about every 6 months. I'm like, you know, this isn't sustainable. And that was the moment after several collapses where I realized that, like, people that really make it to old age with really healthy relationships and really get through things don't function that way. They find a much more balanced pattern. I have no idea what that is, but I also don't know where to find it. Like, I can visualize it abstractly, right? But I don't have that in my life to walk through in a mentorship kind of relationship or something like that. It just seemed like this fictitious thing. So I launched out on a journey to say, well, first, I should probably get in counseling to figure out what I don't know, ask some different questions. and then get into a community and start asking some better questions with other people that will love me well enough to walk through, when instead of me just picking myself back up off the floor every single time, because I can, but it's kind of miserable and it's pretty lonely.
Yeah. And your answers can only be as good as your questions. So if the questions right. aren't good, then the answers won't be helpful. And yeah, sometimes absolutely. You need someone who's not in it to give you some perspective.
Yes. 100%.
So, okay. So when did the seizures and the all that happen? Was that like when with one of these?
A year later.
Okay. So that yeah. was, okay. So first, before we get to that, so you go into counseling, what was like the thing that really kind of was like an aha moment or like an eye-opening moment for you?
Yeah. So counseling seemed like a very taboo thing to me. It was, you know, you go to people that are really sick or broken or insecure, all these things go to counseling. I'm not saying that that's true. I'm saying that that was my excuse for why it wasn't for me. And then I finally decided, okay, I'm not going to commit myself to counseling as a long-term thing. I'm just going to dip my toe in the pool and we're going to go in, you know, surgical. This is how I am, very type A. All right, we're going to go in. So I went and I sat in counseling. I'm like, okay, very nice to meet you. So we've got 5 sessions and here are the problems. And I just need you to give me homework. And she's like, oh, that's cute. But no, that's not how this works. Yeah. But it's really sweet. You're motivated. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, hit me, sister, because I'm ready for whatever it is. I'm assuming that I'm crazy because I'm here in the first place, right? I'm assuming that I'm clearly failing at things. That's why I'm here. And it was nice to hear from somebody who said, one, you're not crazy, but two, you are carrying more than you need to. How do we navigate this? And then the sitting with myself. So what I found was the holidays seemed to be the toughest time for me. I was carrying a lot of grief. There was a lot of pain, not associated with the holidays specifically, but the holidays just seemed to bring up my awareness of the dysfunction and all of the busyness and everything that was happening. I felt like I could walk into a room and just scream at the top of my lungs and be completely and utterly alone. And it was terrifying. And it was just sad, you know, to think about some of the things, you know, with my family or past hurts that hadn't been addressed. So it was a very lonely time. And I told my counselor, and this was the moment I told her, I said, yeah, I'm dreading the holidays. I just see them coming and I don't know what to do about it. And I have no outlet and I have tons of friends that are inviting me, but like, I don't want to go to their family dysfunction and act like that's funny. You know, like I super appreciate the offer, but I've got something else going on here where it really doesn't matter where I am. I'm going to be in a lot of pain. And she said, well, Amy, just because you see a pothole coming in the road doesn't mean you have to hit it. You could swerve to avoid it. And I was like, oh,
well, isn't that, you know, like that's,
thank you, like, Captain Obvious.
Like, but okay. But this is the pattern though of self-sabotage and like, oh, even though I don't like it, I'm comfortable in the trauma, you know, and I'm comfortable in the drama. And so,
yeah,
pothole. No, I'm just going to go right over it because I don't think that there's even an option of swerving around it.
Like I've hit that pothole every year. It's just, how can I, so I'm thinking like, how can I reinforce my car to handle the pothole? But you know, rather than like, oh yeah, I guess I could swerve around it. Common sense. But that's the pattern, right? These are the pathways that happen over years of trauma and dysfunction and learning how to survive. So the tools that we acquire in survival are fantastic when we need to survive. But they are horrible tools, completely dysfunctional when we're trying to do something a healthy way. Those tools no longer serve us and we have to learn a new pathway and learn a new way of thinking. And so she's like, Amy, instead of looking at the holidays as a time to dread and how lonely you are, get excited about the holidays because things will quiet down a little bit on those days and you can celebrate yourself. What is Amy gonna do for Amy on those days? I was like, oh, that's a novel concept. And I actually had, she's like, so I want you to actually lose yourself in having fun planning what you are going to do for yourself for the holidays. This is an Amy day. this is a free PTO day only. You don't have to burn PTO. I was like, oh, okay. Now you got my attention. I got you. So I went and I like bought all the food and I made myself my own feast. I'm like, it doesn't matter if I throw half of it away because I can't, you know, that, right? This is not a time to be practical. This is a time to celebrate in a way that I never have for myself and to embrace it. And so I did. I put up my tree and I put on, you know, the corny Christmas movies and I baked the cookies and gave them away and all that stuff. And I had a great time. I had a great time. And so the year later, then when I get hit by this momentum.
Okay, hold on. Before you go there, I got to stop you for a second because I love what you did there. And I don't know if people really understand the importance of what you did, because this is something that I've actually learned through my own healing and looking back at why do I have a lack mentality? And like, why do I always like think I don't deserve this much, or I can't have that much, or, you know, it's only a certain amount and no more. And a lot of us carry this, a lot of us do. And when you just talked about creating your meal, you know, your holiday meal, and how like it didn't matter how much you made, even if you threw out like half of it, it's like this wasn't about, again, like you said, being practical. And in my family, my mom would always just make the amount of food that was just enough to feed all of us. No leftovers. And you know, when, and some might think, well, you don't want to waste anything, you know? And it's like, well, what that did was I had to be very careful. Obviously, I didn't want to take more than what was my portion, even though maybe I had wanted more. I didn't want to take more. And so already I'm believing that there's only so much to go around. You can't take more than what you deserve, you know? And of course, all I deserved was a little bit. There wasn't this big feast. And what I loved, I had an Italian friend, a best friend at the time. Whenever I went over to her house, her mom had like 5 dishes that were so packed full that could feed 12 people for like maybe 4 or 5 of us, you know? And she's like, munge, munge, eat more. Like, you're not eating enough. And I'm like, oh my God, I've never seen so much food on the table. And in my mind, I'm like, who's going to eat all this, you know? But I have now purposely, just because I'm trying to work through the programming of, you know, I can only have this much, or I'm only allowed to have that much. And just that idea. And it's been really interesting to reprogram the mind to know that you can have as much as you want or as little as you want. You get to decide.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That poverty sort of mindset that kind of comes with, I don't deserve, or I cannot have, or there's a limit to this. And, you know, God doesn't operate that way. And I've really come to, in building my relationship with him. Now I'm not, you know, I need to preface this. I'm not one that, you know, buys into a religion that has wounded people so deeply and all that. This is about my story, my relationship with Jesus and what that has looked like for me and how that has kept me alive over the years, quite literally kept me alive. And in spending time with him and the moments that, you know, the things that I kept trying to find in relationships. Now, there was a period of time that I was in relationships where they were disposable, and they were disposable on purpose. I picked them that way because I knew this has a shelf life. It's going to end in a certain amount of time and I have control over that. And that's all I wanted. I just wanted, you know, I wanted to go to the buffet. I want a little sample of that, a little sample of that. And I did, and it was delicious, but you know, you acquire all kinds of wounds along the way. And, yeah. You know, and when they look at you and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't understand. I'm like, it's fine. It's not for you to understand, but I like, this was all I wanted out of this. And then I transitioned into a period after kind of doing some of the work and sitting with God and asking him the questions. And also, you know, I have this saying of like, if you want to know what your purpose is and you want to know how you're built, like ask the manufacturer, and God is our manufacturer. And I started asking him questions instead of looking to my job, because my job, I was all over the place. I got fired from a job, which is completely not like me. Liberating. Everybody should get fired at least once, but totally unlike me. Like I'm the person that's in charge and I'm type A and I meet every single deadline and I get it done and I get things done. So my identity tied to all these things that wasn't working, relationships that I intended to be disposable, that's going to be tragic. you know, a career that's just not getting off the ground, relationships that are just, they're in transition constantly. I met people along this journey that were a lot of fun to be around, but we were not good for each other. Friend groups that I had to kind of call and continually dig up and replant and dig up and replant. It's painful. To get out of that poverty mindset and say, God, what is your purpose? And he's like, it's in his word. It's in the Bible. It's all over in the Bible. It's not the prosperity gospel. That's crap. That says it's going to be easy and you're supposed to have all these easy things and it's all about just you. It's not. But to be in a place where you have such abundance that you can be like Joseph in the Bible, where you can see that there's a famine coming and you are positioned in such a way that Thanksgiving meal, I've got all this extra. Well, guess what? I've got people that live near me that there are six people crammed into a one bedroom apartment. They will gladly take my leftovers that were homemade, right? So it's a celebration of me and it becomes a celebration of the people around me, that my taking care of me, my filling my cup up should continuously be this overflow into the community around me. So I'm still meeting the same purpose. I'm still doing all that going and doing and being for people, but I'm prioritizing me first, where I'm not doing it by running my tank empty constantly. I'm doing it in a way where I'm filled up so consistently that it never runs out. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
swerve.
I know.
And turn on the faucet.
I know. Like, okay. Let's talk about this, because there are a lot of people who burn themselves out. You know, they just keep going and keep going because they just don't know. Well, they don't know anything else and they don't think anything else will work. Usually when you're in that mindset, you think that if you stop, everything falls apart, right?
The world is suddenly going to end.
Yeah. Yes, right? And to some degree, it kind of does, but it only does in a way that to crash the system that you've been running on so that you don't go back to it, you know, and that is allowing a new system to be rebirthed. But what would you say to someone who perhaps is running that impervious freight train, okay, and maybe thinking about stopping? Like, what would you say is so important about when it comes to filling your own cup versus taking care of everyone else and everything else but yourself?
It's a very selfish principle, honestly, to think that it's just going to stop operating without me. I mean, think about it from a leadership perspective in a business, and the person who is the CEO of that business is micromanaging everything else, and they're burnt out because they're in everybody else's business, because those people have to line up at the CEO's office every single day to get their portion of what it is that they need. To keep going, versus a CEO that's going to thrive and their business is going to grow and they're actually going to have a little fun along the way, is someone that recognizes that this is my lane and my job is to invest in people in such a way where I don't have an ego that says they are so dependent on me and I have to show up for everybody else. No, I show up for myself first. I make sure that the faucet is on. I'm asking the right questions. I'm looking to God for my inspiration. So that way too, I'm not just coming up with these things that are birthed out of, like, you can see plants can grow out of a broken rock. It's crazy, but it doesn't mean it's going to thrive there. Sure. But it's going to reach capacity. There is a ceiling. It is not going to become a redwood with those kind of roots. So having the recognition that I have these broken pieces of our past, we're trying to plant our identity in things that are all kinds of broken. No, excavate that crap, get it out of there. Do the work, plant some real roots, and teach people how to cultivate around you. So then as you're pouring into them, they're watching how you pour into you. So they no longer are constantly in this poverty mindset in their life. They have learned that, oh, I can make these changes for myself. And then that becomes a ripple effect to their children and the people in their circle. So you're doing them an injustice by constantly thinking that you have to show up for them and be everything and drop and be available 24/7 and run at that operating pace. Because if you do have that position in their life, they are watching you. So what kind of a standard are you setting? You're setting the standard of someone who says it can't be done if I don't do it myself.
And it's a very codependent relationship. Like that is
so unhealthy.
That is so codependent behavior, and it's just very, very unhealthy. And people don't realize that when they're doing that. How? Because now basically you're saying you're not able to do this. You're not able to get this without my help, or this won't happen for you unless I help you do it. It's just, it's like you said, it's very egotistical. Without ever realizing, because we convince ourselves it's coming from our heart,
you know, but really being helpful.
But really it's a need to control everything outside of you. And
say that louder for the people in the back. That's what it is. It's control. You nailed it. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to cut you off. Please keep going.
Well, tell me about, because, you know, I've been there I still struggle with this to some degree. You know, it's not something that just goes away overnight. You reduce it and you reduce it and you hit more lessons and then you just keep working on it. But this need to really control everything outside of you is because inside you are so out of fucking control. You are so out of control inside. So therefore you have to, because none of us want to look inside. That's not where the problem is. Chaos happening outside of me. That's just because everyone else like just needs my help, or this is what's, you know, no. Like, and we don't realize, oh shoot, maybe I'm contributing to that because I'm projecting everything that's inside of me into my world.
100%. And the people that we allow around us, the boundaries that we set, the boundaries we don't set, the cutoff game we have, the cutoff game that we should have, the cutoff game that we need to get rid of, right? Like knowing the difference, again, kind of going back to that community and the good pain and the bad pain. They're not a hater if they love you enough to call you out on something you're doing that is totally unhealthy. I love you enough to say, Amy, if you keep operating at this pace and you keep doing this, you are going to crash. Amy, I love you and I appreciate you trying to help, but I don't need your help. Things like that. If you're not dealing with you, you're going to get offended by that kind of thing. And iron sharpens iron, right? But if iron is around plastic, it's going to dull that knife very, very quickly. And the last thing I want in my life, and this is one thing that has helped me more than so many things, but this has been a profound part of my working through the freight train, the being afraid of dealing with sitting with myself and what it looks like on the other side of the wreckage and cleaning that up. And that is the ability to say, I welcome healthy feedback. I do have good intuition. The Holy Spirit does speak to me. He gives me words of knowledge. He gives me good discernment. I need to honor that and honor myself by not blowing it off and getting into relationships that I know, like I've got a little collection. I got a bouquet of red flags over here. And I'm like, oh, it'll be fine. No, it will not be. No, it will not be. When in the history of ever has that been fine? It never, ever blooms into something that you actually want. So to sit with myself and say, okay, what was my participation in this? Not they're a piece of crap or look at what they did to me or look, absolutely. The things that they did are not okay. However, I got to separate myself from that and say, what was my participation? Well, I allowed it. I answered the text. I answered the call. I let them come over. Whatever the case may be, that's on me. Right? So being able to take that sort of feedback and move forward and say, okay, it's not about being perfect. It's about just continually learning new things and giving myself grace so that I don't feel like I fail every time I learn. They're two different things.
Yeah. And that's a big thing too. We put so much judgment on ourselves, so many high expectations. So I think our ego purposely puts such high expectations on so that when we do fail, we will give up. We'll think it doesn't work. You know, I'm not good at this. And completely not try to succeed. And it's funny because this can happen to anyone. Even the most successful people can go through this in some area of their life. And we all have that weak link in our chain that needs to be really kind of put back together and strengthened, you know, or maybe it's one that needs to be removed. It, you know, can go both ways. You get to choose like what you think needs to stay and what goes. But like, so, okay. So then you, you get hit by the freight train a year later. Take us through that.
It was scary. And it was also one of those moments that really identified this. I'm showing up for everybody. And what kind of example am I setting? So in that moment, when those people that look to me, it just feels like everybody just kind of comes to me. And I loved it because I felt valued. I felt like I had value. I felt like I had purpose. I felt like the things I did had meaning and I felt loved. But there was still something that wasn't quite right, right? Again, that I'm in a crowded room and I still feel completely and utterly alone. So in that moment, when they see me collapse, I see the panic in the people around me, because like I said, they watch, they are observing. And if they look to you in that sort of way, then they're trying to learn from you. And what they saw was me fail in a way that I needed to. And what I have found, even though it was, like, I don't like to be fussed over, again, being the one that's in control and people come to me, there's this weird balance of like, I want you to just read my mind and know when I'm having trouble and just show up for me when I'm not saying anything, because I'm fine all the time. However, when I do need something, don't fuss. Like, please, for the love of all things holy, do not fuss. I don't like to be fussed over because it makes me, I'm embarrassed by it because I feel weak. Right. So in that moment, when I saw them like that, I'm like, okay, well, I need to do better, and I need to do better for me, not for them, not for anybody else. I need to do better for me. And this is just kind of confirmation that this is exactly what had to happen. So the benefit of it was, though, they didn't stop watching me. They started watching me pick those pieces up and work through the imperfections and work through the change of mindset and work through the new pathways. And so it has inspired them. I have watched some of these people that I felt like I really needed to nurture and cultivate. They're just observing what I'm doing, and I'm watching these little sprouts happen where they're mimicking me. It's almost, and I don't have my own children, but if I did, I would find that to be the highest compliment, unless I'm cursing. And then they've created a new core memory and, you know, now the F word is their new favorite word.
The light is coming in here and it's totally creating this weird pixelization here.
I thought it was just mine. Go for it.
No. One second.
There you are.
Okay. It's much better. Yeah. I don't know why my webcam does that when there's too much light. It just starts pixelating anything that's a lighter color. So
my internet going haywire.
I was like, okay, now it's starting to look really weird. I'm sure she's probably getting distracted. okay. So you collapse. So you had seizures? Like, what happened exactly?
So I would be driving, and then it felt like someone just pulled a shade down over my eyes. Like, I would be blind for a few seconds, then it'll come back up. And I'm like, oh, that's probably not normal. and then also I was having a lot of chest pain. So I actually ended up in the ER twice in the same day. I went once, and I was stubborn. I like drove myself and oh no, I was going to drive myself, and my people panicked, and they're like, no, you have to call. I'm like, fine, I'll call the ER if it makes you feel better. So, you know, at least the EMTs were cute. They were nice. But I was like, listen, I'm only doing this because I'm being forced to do this, but I'm having pain. And so, you know, they put the little stickies on you, but they couldn't get a good reading of anything. So when I got to the ER, they did all the, you know, whatever they could do. They said, we need to catch it when it's active. Same with like your eye thing. Okay, fine. I'm going to go back to work. An hour later, I was doubled over. I felt like my chest was going to explode. And so called the ER again. This time they had to peel me off of the parking lot. Like, I was completely gray, and they picked me back up, and they're like, well, now you're not looking as good as we saw you the first time. Clearly something is, you know, actively happening at the moment. So through a number of different tests, we were finally able to find that, thank goodness, I don't have anything like that. But the only explanation we could come up with is just stress. And I was so confused. I'm like, but my stress level right now and for the past almost year has been good because I've been making healthy choices. I've created boundaries. I'm learning to have a governor where I create an off switch and I don't just go, 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 go. Like, I'll take a nap or, you know, drink more water, simple things. Say no. It's a novel concept. No is a complete sentence, by the way. Oh, I love no, to say yes. That. It is a complete sentence.
It is. It is.
I do not need to explain to you why I said no.
And
I simply said no.
Exactly, exactly. And I always say it takes two people to say yes, but only one person to say no.
Facts, girl. So yeah, okay. That was what it felt like at the time.
Well, this is important because people, again, just kind of circling back to the beginning when we talked about the impervious freight train and what that actually is, I think it's really helpful for people to understand this because a lot of people would think this is a failure. You know, think like, oh, I'm not doing something right, you know, or I thought I was making all the right choices. What am I doing wrong? And it can just become this really confusing experience where you may feel like you're on the completely wrong path, but not so. So tell us like how you were able to see the beauty of this. Like, what was the gift? What was the light in this whole experience?
That's such a great question. And true, that is very much how it felt at the time. It manifested for me as failure. Now I suddenly cannot maintain the lifestyle and the dysfunction or whatever that I was doing before. I've now therefore failed. And once I was able to kind of process it and understand it as not a failure, it was simply change. Change is not failure. Change is hard. Change is uncomfortable, but change is a very healthy process. It can be a recalibration of things. And that's all this was. This was a hard recalibration because I needed a hard correction. I was on a very, very destructive path. One that would have ended me. I mean, I'm a suicide survivor twice over. If I had gone on that path, I probably would have been, executed it. That would have been my third go with it. So no, it was a recalibration. It was a saving grace and it was a gift. And the part when I really realized it, it took some time and it was very hard and it was very painful and very uncomfortable. But when I got to the point where I started sitting with myself and asking the questions and you let some of those things where you've done the surgery, now the surgery is starting to do some healing and you sit with yourself in a quiet room and it's peaceful. You don't have to fill it with anything. You don't have to make a plan for anything. You can go into a day and say, I'm ready for whatever this day has. Even if that means that I have dirty hair and sweatpants the whole weekend, I have not failed because guess what? I can still do laundry and I can still do these other things on Monday during my regular week. That I'm not a failure for listening to my body and really taking into account, like, I am exhausted. Okay, well then say no. They may expect you to say yes, and they may be shocked when you say no, but you are again teaching them a healthy lesson. If they're people that need to be in your life, they're going to learn from it and they're not going to question it. It's not going to be, well, why are you saying no? I love to use this example one because it's kind of funny, but it hits. And I think women in particular we are the worst at not saying no to things. We feel this, it's kind of a cultural pressure of we can just handle anything and we just say yes to everything. Be everything for everybody. But I was hanging out with this person. She's like, we should be friends. I'm like, but should we? I don't like, I know you think that, but I don't know. I don't know if I agree, but you know, I'm going to give it a whirl. Right. So, we spent some time together. We had like a girls' night and it was fun, but clearly I was like, okay, you know, it's time to go home at the very least. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to head home and why don't you want to stay for longer? And all these things. I'm like, because I have plans tomorrow. Oh, well, what are your plans? Sister, my plans are not be here, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. My plan is to not interface with other humans. My plan is to just take care of me. And I don't need to justify that. I'm tired. I'm ready to go home. My plan is none of your business. Okay. And being okay with that, an old me would have felt pressure to, like, those are her things. Those are her issues. And I would have felt a need to help her with those. Instead, I was like, no, I have to come first here. She'll be all right. She's been riding that train for 40 years. She'll be all right.
And she learned a good boundary lesson, you know, like
boundaries. Yeah. Yes. And the people that won't respect your boundaries, well, it's going to piss them off. Well, guess what? That's what those boundaries are there for. They are there to piss off the people that will not respect them. It's just a byproduct of doing what you have to do. So that's really what, and then I forget exactly what question you asked me that got me on that tangent, but.
Well, just in how did you purpose it into light? Like, how did you take that darkness and purpose it into light, which I think you were kind of explaining.
The sitting with myself piece of just being able to understand a piece that I have never, ever, ever felt in my life. So it's unfamiliar. And so I raged against the light, as you would say, or I've heard it said, you know, I raged against the dying of the light, I think is what the quote is. But, you know, what I thought was light in my life was all these things I was making up my purpose. And when I was able to just sit with myself and enjoy me time without guilt or fear or panic, I realized that I had a lot of relationships, particularly when it came to dating, that were rooted in panic and trauma bonds, and a lot of projection of pain and rejection from my past. So when I didn't feel the need to be out there actively fixing those outward things, and I could just sit with me and fix the me things in quiet and privacy, with some solidarity, and honor myself and not look at it as punishment, like I'm fear of missing out. I'm not out there doing all these things other people are doing at first. That was the first thing. Like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here, I'm wasting time. I could be doing anything but the work. But once I see it as like swerving, you know, and missing the potholes and creating a meal for myself, this is self-care. This is healing myself. This is going to make me more robust that I can get back out there when that time is right. It was the most amazing feeling ever to experience peace on a level that I had never, I didn't know, you know, people would say the word peace and it legitimately had zero meaning for me. It sounded like some utopian ridiculousness, honestly. I'm like, oh, that's cute. Put it on a Christmas card.
Yeah, I know.
it meant nothing to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the thing is that, you know, the reason being is that when you have this desire for peace because everything is so chaotic and, you know, in a moment you're like, oh, I just want some peace and quiet, or, you know, like, but when you get there, you're like, you experience it and there's a part of you that wants it, but then there's also a part of you that wants to reject it because it means the part of you that favored the chaos needs to die. And there's grief, there's loss that you're actually going through that you don't even realize you're losing a part of yourself that isn't healthy, but still there's an attachment to it. And so we always go through some kind of grief or loss, even if we know it's not good for us. And so I think
so that's profound.
Part of the process that people have to understand, that when you're trying to reach that point that is so brand new for you, you've never really experienced it. You know it's going to be good for you, but at the same time, it's foreign or uncertain. You get there and then you're having these mixed feelings about it. Part of you enjoys it and part of you is like, well, why the fuck am I so sad? Like, why am I like feeling lost right now?
Yes. Oh, that's so good. And to be, and this is part of the journey that is so challenging, is when you're going through these very unfamiliar things and you can't identify, there's some sort of comfort. And I think it's just the sense of feeling like you're getting a little more control back, but comfort in being able to label and identify it as this. And it's a certain phenomenon that is not uncommon. It may be I might be experiencing it in an uncommon way, but the phenomenon of grief itself is not uncommon at all. So if I'm able to say, wait a second, I'm feeling XYZ, I'm feeling grief. It's panic, but it's coming out of grief. And then I'm able to detach myself from it enough to say, okay, this is what's happening. I can be calm. Or like for us females, like the times that we feel like we are absolute lunatics. We're like, wait, what's the calendar? 3 weeks into the month. Oh, okay. So I got it. 3 days from now, I'll be fine. You know, kind of a thing. Suddenly you stop feeling so crazy. You've anchored yourself. You've kind of grounded yourself in something that you can walk through. There's a ladder that you can follow the rungs through. But if you don't know that it's grief and you have no idea that it's coming, when it does hit you, it's startling and terrifying and super uncomfortable.
So what was your anchor that you dropped through all of this? Like, what was that thing that was just dragging you down?
You know, with It's funny you say that. It wasn't so much the anchor that I dropped, it was the anchor that I pulled up. I had dropped anchors at different points in my life. There was one particular relationship that was super, super dysfunctional, and it hit at just exactly, it was the perfect storm. And it hit exactly the right time at a time where I was really kind of transforming. And this person was also, he was kind of transforming, and we happened to intersect right at this perfect point where we seemed kind of perfect for each other. And I thought he was from the path that he seemed to be on in his new, brand new steps, right? Like he'd been taking a path this way and he started taking four steps that way. I'm like, oh, he's going this way. Not necessarily true. He took four steps that way, right? But ultimately he was going to go back to going this way. However, three steps into the four, I dropped an anchor. I dropped an anchor at who I thought he was and who I thought I was in respect to that. So then every time he would show me that he's going this direction, I couldn't process it. And I would be like, well, I basically tethered myself to who I thought he was going to be, who I thought he wanted to be, his potential, who his mama said he was, all the things. And in that, it put me into a tailspin every time that that was rocked. And it sounds crazy, but that relationship would kind of come and go in and out of my life over the course of 6 years that I would put up with that until finally the light bulb came on and I was like, okay, wait a second. He's not just a raging piece of shit. Something, I mean, he is, but what is my participation in this, right? He's not doing this all by himself. I'm participating. And when I pulled that anchor up, it allowed me to do some healing. So what was profound about that relationship actually wasn't the person. He was a representation. I projected all kinds of things from my childhood onto that intersection. And I dropped an anchor and I said, this will now be better. This will now right all of those wrongs. And I didn't realize that it was little Amy who was making those decisions. It was little Amy that chose him. Because little Amy thought that this person who represented all the rejection in my past, who now looked at me like I was the most tasty unicorn he'd ever seen in his entire life, now it's all going to be all better, right? Because I'm now being seen by all of those things. And that wasn't true. I still had to continue to do the work myself. And so once I was able to do that, I was able to forgive him. And I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day. I think it's really, words mean something. And I think it's super important that we're very, very clear on what we mean when we say some of these big, important words. Forgiveness represents a lot of horrible things to a lot of people. Forgiveness does not mean I'm saying that the things that he did and all the people before him did are okay. They're not okay. But that's not my job and that's not my problem. And every time I think about it and I have that tethered to me, I've got that soul tie tethered to me. Every time I nurse that, it re-wounds me over and over and over and over. So I need to cut that soul tie off. I need to cut these things off and I need to do the healing. That energy and all that stuff, that goes back to you. I am simply sending it back to you. Not even as a maliciousness, but that's your stuff. I'm not going to worry about fixing you, helping you. All that stuff.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not carrying this for you anymore.
I'm not going to carry this for you. I'm going to deal with me. And once I was able to forgive him, just so we're clear, it's not saying that what he did was okay. It was simply putting the baggage down and moving on for my own sake. It was tremendous. And it opened up all these doors. It actually was like this combination lock that opened up all these other boxes that I had all this other garbage in. That I was now able to look at it with fresh eyes and go, well, that never deserved a box in the first place. That can go, that can go, that can go, that can go. And I did a whole bunch of house cleaning and the freedom and the weight that came from that. Now, mind you, some of that was, you know, snot and ugly cry and tears and, you know, on the floor, just doing the work and working it out. So it wasn't pretty, but on the other side, the weight that came off and unlocking the ability to say, okay, I projected these things that little Amy never dealt with, didn't know how to deal with. Now big Amy can come in and say, little Amy, I'm going to come and be kind to you, and I'm going to stop trying to reject you and feel like I've outgrown you. And no, I'm going to come and I'm going to kneel before you. I'm going to say, I recognize the pain that you went through, and I'm going to help you. And we're going to work through these things, and then we're going to move forward. I'm going to carry you with me instead of leave you in my past and try to outrun you and the things that you were strong. Little Amy was very strong. Little Amy went through a lot of things and she survived it. She needs to be honored and respected. And so some of that battle that I didn't know how to identify until I got to the other side of it was this constant tension between little Amy and adult Amy. Little Amy picked this dysfunctional person. Big Amy was constantly like, what are you doing? He's an asshole. Like, what are you doing? These are obvious things. Like, what are you doing? You know better.
Big
Amy does. Little Amy doesn't.
Exactly. And I see this all the time, you know, and this is why I'm such a, you know, inner child work is so important to me and why I love to help people heal through the inner child. And it's because we don't understand that wounded little boy or girl inside of us is the one choosing all of our dysfunctional relationships, because they're the one who's been around the longest in the subconscious, not adult Nicole or adult Amy. You know, the little one inside of us has been holding the reins of the subconscious and basically has been ruling the roost, you know, and ultimately will make the choices because that subconscious has been patterned and programmed since the very beginning of your life. And so when you're trying to make these healthier decisions, you know, it's hard. It's hard to realize that it's not you actually making them. It's that little boy or girl inside you. And they're making them from this place of fear of rejection, or wanting to just be loved, or wanting to be seen, you know, or just needing to be valued, or, you know, needing to be like, and like you said, value was, oh, I can do things for people, so that means I'm valuable, you know, and so therefore I become the overgiver and I burn myself out, but I'm valuable, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm broke as a joke in every way that's meaningful to keep my engine running, but I'm valuable to everybody else around me.
Yeah.
It's a very painful process.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's really quickly. What I love is, you know, when people go through this at varying points, and I think the beautiful thing about COVID and all of that we've been going through in the last 2 years is that it has really slowed things down for people to start asking better questions so they can start getting better answers to their life. And one of the biggest questions is like, who am I? What is my purpose? What am I supposed to be doing? You know, what did you find was the most helpful way to go about that? Because we often are looking outside of ourselves for the answers.
Oh yeah, almost always. And I didn't do it by choice. I did it. I went raging and screaming into the catastrophe that became my life. And I just decided, I was like, well, I mean, I could sit here and wallow around in the broken glass, or I could go get a broom. And so I decided to just start. And it was overwhelming. I mean, it was almost paralyzingly overwhelming how much my world came crashing down around me once I realized. So here was the thing for me. Once I recognized that the pain that I was dealing with was disproportionate to the problem in front of me. So I'm looking at the problem in front of me, or the relationship that has gone bad, even if it was a relationship that I picked because it was disposable. I was shocked and devastated at how much I was in so much pain on the other side of it. And then I was able to go, wait a second, this is disproportional. What's going on here? And I was so grateful. I had a hairdresser at the time who had been, I was obviously finally open to the idea of counseling. So at least that part of me had cracked open a little bit, much to my counselor's entertainment. And then my hairdresser, who had started listening to the psychologist who was talking about, she brought up this idea of trauma bonds and narcissistic parents and things like this. And I was like, ooh, that sounds gross and awful. And I don't think I'm ready for it. And she's like, that's okay. It's probably going to take some time for you to be ready for it. But we connected over the fact that we both had very difficult childhoods. So talking to people can be very valuable. where it pointed me in the direction of even just listening. She's like, just go to his channel and just pick something that looks of interest. And before you know it, you'll be Alice in Wonderland and you'll kind of sift through some things and the light bulbs will start to come on to allow you to deal with this. And that's when I was able to go, ta-da. Okay. So trauma bonds. I already understood the idea of soul ties, but what I didn't understand was the fact that I wasn't grieving this relationship. I was grieving pain from when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, 12, 15, when I was a child. So this wound cut deep enough to go all the way back to those sorts of things. So while it was very difficult, I found that it was probably the best thing that could have happened to help me get my bearings to move forward. And now to just use that to share my experience, even though it's not perfect. And that's the thing too, I'm not looking to arrive. Because if that's the case, I'm constantly going to be disappointed by every false summit. I'm not going to arrive. I'm just going to continually progress and get better. And as long as I'm okay with the fact that this is a journey and I'm just hopefully not going to recycle the same mistakes, then that's kind of where I'm at this point. I don't know if that answered the question fully, but I have a tendency to get on these little tangents.
Well, no, really. Well, I thought it was beautiful. I'm glad that you went on that tangent because I love that. You know, one of the things you said to me when we were out having drinks was that what people need to do when it comes to asking, you know, who am I? What is my purpose? And really trying to figure that out in their life. And why am I here? Like, what's the point of all of this? And you said to me that people need to start asking their manufacturer, who is God, universe, whoever, you know, you relate to. And I love that because, yeah, who made you? You know, like who created your creator? Like tune in. And the only way you get those answers is by turning inward, because the space that you find that in is within your own heart. Yeah, that is absolutely. That is your gateway.
Yeah. I mean, he built you. So he built that code into you. If you're willing to, you know, look up the VIN number for it, it's all right there. It's all built in, you know, and I picked that up from somebody else. They said something about, you know, hey, if your car is having trouble, you know, you're not going to take it to a psychologist. If your car is having trouble, you're going to take it back to the manufacturer. And I'll go, well, this is how we built it. And this is what it is intended to do. And this is why it won't swim for you, right? It's supposed to stay on the road. So I've always had a relationship with God. One of the things my biological father did right, I think in some ways by accident, but I'll take it. He took me to church when I was a kid. I think my father had an understanding that he didn't have the right tools, but he at least knew to get me there, much to my mother's urging, of course, as well. But so either by fear or by force, he took me to church. And I was able to see in that the way that God is the perfect father. He created me. He loves me. He's with me versus, you know, I'm looking at my biological father and I'm seeing like he doesn't have the tools. He can't possibly be what a father is supposed to be. But I love him. He's my father. But I can love him also knowing that he simply does not know how to be a healthy, functional human. And this was so profound. Same hairdresser, very dear friend of mine. And she's forever going to be part of my path and my journey. I'm so grateful that I met her. But we had talked extensively about many of these sorts of things. And she called me up in tears one day. And she was like, Amy, I just don't understand. She says, we came from some significant dysfunction that is very, very, very similar, you know, you and me. But your view and your relationship with God is so different than mine is. And I don't understand why. And I'm heartbroken because I want to be close to God because I do have an understanding that he's there. I just feel so far. And I don't know how to get to that. And I said, well, I think part of this also knowing her story, I said, you and I got a very different message as children. I said, the message that I got was going all the way back to Sunday school. I heard a story from the Bible and it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's in the book of Daniel, I believe it is. And it's about these three men who wouldn't bow to this king. And he said, fine, I'm going to throw you in this fire pit. And he throws these three men into the fire pit, and he looks in and he's like, wait a second, I threw three people in there. There are four. What is going on? And it was Jesus. Jesus showed up in the fire with them. He walked them out. They didn't smell like smoke. They didn't die. They weren't singed. None of that. So the message that I got was, buckle in, babe. This is going to suck. This is going to be hard, but I will be with you through it. I will be with you. And so that stuck with me. That's been profound. That has kept me alive through things where it's like, well, why do unfair things happen? Well, you know, people want to blame God. Like, why would God let this happen? God didn't let that happen. It's the fact that we've kicked him out. He's a gentleman. He's a gentleman. He doesn't force himself into things. So we've kicked him out. It's not, you know, it's the absence of God that has caused that. It's because you've said, I don't want your help. I've got this. Or someone else did on your behalf and their choices are now affecting you unfairly. But for her, the message that she got was, and it was terrible doctrine. It was absolutely terrible. They took her to church, like her neighbors took her to church one time. And the message that she got, and this is why I do struggle with religion. I think community is super important. I think going to the Bible, going to your source, praying, spending time in meditation, you know, and prayer and really plugging into God is important, but also recognizing that people are imperfect. And if they get on that religious train and they start coming off of the rails of what God really has to say, they can say some really, really, really damaging, horrible things that are not true and not right. So you'll say to a seven-year-old, well, now, you know, now you've accepted Jesus in your heart and you're saved and life's going to be all better. Now it's going to be all right now. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? That's not at all what God has to say. He says, you're probably going to be persecuted and it's going to be tough. And I was killed unfairly, but like, I'll be with you through that.
Yeah.
That's a very different expectation.
That's my problem with religion, where of course, and this is because of humans. This is not because of our creator, God, the universe, whatever it is that people really identify with. It's, to me, it's that using fear to manipulate people into making a choice. So what people fear, hell, okay, and that, or the concept of what hell could be, you know, and so you choose God so that you don't go through hell. But we all signed up to learn a lot of soul lessons here, and we're all going to walk through hell to some varying degree multiple times, I'm sure, throughout our life. And you're right, the whole point is that God is always with us. It's just a matter of, are you paying attention? Are you tuned in? Are you welcoming him back in? Because most of us usually push God away. And so it's important to really kind of grasp that concept, because you're right. There's a big disservice in how the interpretation can be delivered to us. And then that interpretation can change the whole meaning. It can change how we are able to function and go through life. Yep. Because then we're like, well, I chose you. Everything's supposed to be good now, you know? And it's like, right? Nah, someone lied to you.
And then it just feels like punishment, like God's punishing me. No, he's not.
No,
he's not.
He loves you. And that's free will. That's why we get to live this life through our free will choices, to experience what we need to experience, to grow on a soul level. So before we wrap this up, I don't know if you'd be willing to just share this briefly, but I was really touched by the fact that you did a talk at, you went to a prison and you did a talk there for the inmates. What was that experience like for you, and how did that kind of shift things for you in understanding your gift?
That's a great question. So it actually, it happened by accident. So I was doing, again, going back to the community thing, right? I'm searching for community and just trying to find where's my space and where's my spot and people that can challenge me, that I can grow with, that will love me as I am, but not necessarily condone. There's a difference between agreeing with someone versus loving them. You can love them wholly, completely, and truly disagree with some of the choices that they make, but you love them enough to just walk alongside them. And that's what I was looking for, because I was still trying to figure some of this stuff out and still doing the work. And so I was like, well, I'm trying to find a church, because I figure I've tried to look for everybody else and bars and wherever else. I'm like, I'm clearly cultivating a certain demographic of people that are not pushing me in the right direction. I need to, you know, look for the fruit in the field where that fruit grows. So I was like, well, let's start with small things. Like, I'll just get involved in a sports ministry, or I can just play volleyball or something with some people that are, you know, semi-cool. We'll figure it out. Well, the volleyball league ended up going to a prison. I was like, oh, we do that? Okay, we're going to do that. So yeah. Here we go. Like, I'm all laced up, ready to go. They're like, oh, you can't play because you're a female. And you're like, wait a second. What am I here for? So I ended up sitting in the stands with a bunch of prisoners in a pretty significant facility. And I was like, well, I can be afraid, or I can dig into the, you know, veteran part of me and be like, I'm playing. And I sat with these people. Now, mind you, some of them were veterans, and we instantly connected, and I had a fantastic, I laughed so hard, I thought my face was going to fall off. Like, we had a great time, and just watching the game and humanizing them in a way. Now, not in a naive sort of way. My biological father has been in and out of prison my entire life. I have felt for a good portion of my life like I have been hunted, literally, by my father. So it wasn't out of some naivety and some very strange sort of self-gratifying. And I have seen some people try and do that. We're like, look at me and look what I'm doing. And I'm like, no, I just kind of fell into it. And I had tried to look for all these volunteer opportunities, and nothing was really hitting. And I actually had somebody, again, going back to people being very human and saying some things that are really out of touch. And I said, gosh, I feel like I finally found something that works for me. I feel kind of bad. I volunteered in things for like special needs and things like that. And it was nice, but it didn't really feel like it fed my soul. It's a very, very noble thing, but we can exhaust ourselves on noble things that are not within our skill set and our gift. So I'm still looking for that. And this person said to me, he said, well, sometimes we do the right things or the wrong things for the right reasons. And I was like, take that back. Take those words from right back in your face. That should have never come out in your outdoor voice. I was genuinely searching, and I genuinely want to get back. I'm not diminishing these things, but there are certain things that we are good at. Me being a school teacher, there would be a homicide. Okay. I'm not built for that. Right? It's just not my skill set. Okay. But you put me with prisoners, or you put me with veterans, and you put me with a suicidal population. Let me tell you, I am very, very comfortable because I can speak to these people and I understand, and they'll look at me and they have a perception of what they think. And then I accidentally get a mic shoved in my face, or they say, hey, it's the Christmas party. Do you want to tell your testimony? I'm like, mm. Anybody else with mic? And 3 minutes in, I'm giving my testimony to these men where, I mean, there were inmates that were serving multiple life sentences, I came to find, that were in tears, that were in the front row. The guard in the back was in tears. I was like, listen, you need to pull it together. Like, if anybody in this room, you really should not be in tears right now. Don't let them see you weak. It's weakness. But in 3 minutes, it was something that was able to touch these men. And I didn't give them some, you know, rah-rah speech. I challenged them. In that moment, I became a little bit they're like their daughter, but at the same time, their drill sergeant. And I said, listen, you don't have to just rot in here, and all the mistakes that you do just flow into your family. And that's just how it is. It's like people that are obese and they're like, well, we're just a fat family. It's just how, no, it doesn't have to be. And then a lot of these families are like, well, my daddy went to prison. My granddaddy went to prison. Like, this is just what we do in our family. At some point, this is going to happen. It doesn't have to be like that for your kids. You may be in here for life, but what are you going to do with this time and space that can affect them outside of these four walls? And you can do that. And you need to work the program. You need to stop making excuses, because every one of you has an excuse. Well, look what happened. And that's what, you're here. you had some participation, that bad things happen to everybody. So you can either nurse your excuses or you can do the work. What is it that you want to demonstrate to your children? Is it, I can't help my dad and my dad can't help me, my father? Because my stepdad is totally separate. He's amazing and all of that. But my biological dad, I mean, you know, that's blood and that's supposed to mean something. I can't do anything, but you guys can. And what is it you're going to do with that? So then they asked me afterwards, you know, is there a program where their kids could talk to me? And as far as I know, there really isn't one, but I'm working on trying to build something like that for them so that we can catch them before they get in the system and they can see that they're, you don't have to end up, apparently statistically, there's like an 86% statistic that I fall into that I should be in prison based on what I come from. And I didn't know that. But I have 2 master's degrees and I've never been arrested. And I was an officer in the Army and I'm relatively functional, you know, at least on the outside, member of society. And so for them to want that for their children, that's what sparked this whole thing. It was me looking for community. And I ended up in a prison with a mic in my hand out of the blue. And that launched Amy Hines Real Talk.
Well, let's just break that down so everyone really understands what happened here very clearly. When you're asking what is your purpose, you need to be asking your manufacturer, your creator, that is God. And it means you've got to turn inward and you've got to ask what, show me where you need me, show me where I am meant to serve, like in the best way that I know how, like that's meant to show off, just not to show off, to showcase my gifts that you gave me to utilize in this life. And what happened? You had a very happy accident of falling into this volleyball team that just decided to go to a prison that day where only the men could play and you were sitting in the stands talking to the prisoners and having this conversation that like just an opportunity led to another opportunity led to another opportunity. And that's how really a lot of this stuff happens. But when we're so stuck in trying to figure out the path, believing that we can figure it out or that we know what's best, that is pushing God aside, okay, and not allowing him in to show us the way. You just need to follow this and I will reveal it to you. And that's exactly what happened here. And so now you've discovered this new purpose of the power of your story and how that can help others who hold this. You hold the codes for people like veterans, like inmates, suicidal people. You hold codes that they need for their program to not just survive, but potentially thrive.
And it's so, so profound.
And this is just like what I think, you know, it's simple, but the best answers always are just turn inward. It's not complex. It's not. But why do we not want to do it? Because it's just easier to keep looking outside of me and pretending like everything that I'm still doing that doesn't work is somehow one day going to work.
Yeah. The answer is simple. The work is hard, right? I mean, the answer, you want to lose weight, you eat better and you go to the gym, but the execution of those things is challenging. It's very, very hard. So the answers are simple, but in this sort of thing and in this sort of work, you've got to be willing to recognize that change does equal breaking of some things. And we equate breaking to always being a bad thing or a negative thing. No, it's just breakthrough. It is helping you to move through things and it's okay. And do not stifle the grief. The worst thing you can do is stifle the grief of that process. Change is difficult and it's hard. Embrace it. Recognize it for what it is. Get a community of people that will love you through it. And don't worry about arriving because you're going to find every kind of false summit that's going to take the wind out of you. Just embrace the fact that you are a work in progress and your manufacturer knows what he's doing. Stop trying to come up with what you think that you were made for. Some people are made for off-roading. Some are not. Do not take your Porsche off-roading. Okay. It's not going to go well. It's just not what they were made for, but To be willing to say, okay, I'm not going to just come up with what I want and then ask you to sign off and endorse it. I'm going to submit and ask you the questions, and then I will agree to get on board with what you say that you have made me for. And it's a very different way of looking at things. I chose my college degree based on, all right, God, this sounds like a good thing. I'm smart. So of course you're going to endorse this, because of course there's only two options. If you're smart, you should be a doctor or a lawyer. No, do you know how much money I would have saved if I had asked some very different questions, and how much grief it would have saved me? So be okay with just letting it go. Let the pieces fall.
I love it. Oh, I'm so glad that we've met, and I'm
thrilled.
You know, I'm so glad that we were able to do this show, and I know my audience is going to just love this story and love your wisdom that has come through a lot of your experiences that have been breakdowns and moments of loss and grief and a whole lot of what the fuck is going on with my life, you know?
Oh, yes. That's exactly it. And what a happy circumstance that we were in a photo shoot and our pictures were up in the gallery right next to each other. One more experienced podcast and one aspiring, trying to figure it out podcaster over here. That's a gift. And I'm so excited. And I'm excited to do more of this journey with you and get to know you even more, because what I know about you already is fantastic. And it's so much fun to talk to you. Like, we just really are very much on the same wavelength about some things that are just very deeply profound. So your audience, I hope they know what a gift you are. And I'm excited to engage with them and to keep engaging with you. I'm just so honored you picked me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It was so sweet. Well, tell my audience where they can reach you if they'd like to either just find out more about you, what you've got going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a website. It's ahrealtalk.com. My name is Amy Hines, AmyHines. It is not spelled like the ketchup. Otherwise, I would have a lot more money and I wouldn't be paving my own way. But ahrealtalk.com. And I just onboarded with a fabulous company called The Speaker Lab, who classically trains speakers to do this professionally. I found that this is a gift that God has given me and a platform that He's given me. So I want to refine it and make it where I can get out and interface with people even more. So stay tuned to that. There'll be more of that coming. But yeah, through my website, it links to some videos that I have that tell a little more about my story and some other people's stories that I've been trying to tell on there as well, while I keep building it out.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And as your journey unfolds, maybe we'll have you back here again one day. And well, I know I'm going to see you soon. We're going to go out for drinks and we're going to catch up and have a great time.
We have so much to catch up on. This is just the recordable version.
Yeah. Oh, man. And you know what? Sometimes, guys, I sometimes am out with, you know, like you, someone like you, Amy, or anyone else, and having these conversations. And I'm like, wow, I just wish I could have recorded this and put it on my podcast. Because I know, like, people just love to just listen to this, because there's so much. It's like, this is part of understanding your purpose. If you just truly allow yourself to really surrender into exactly who you are by just letting go and just letting your freak flag fly, you know, in whatever way. And I say that in the sense that you're not like everyone else, you know, you just let all of your uniqueness, because usually the things that don't make us like everyone else are our gifts and our assets. And for some reason, we feel like we need to cover those up, you know. And when you start speaking your truth and you start sharing, you know, just exactly who you are, you hold codes that other people are needing. And then you have these conversations, and then you're also attracting people who hold codes for you. And it's just because basically you're saying, I'm ready, you know, like, welcome to the party. If you're wanting to like join this party, you can come in and have fun. If you've got the same kind of party going on, I want to show up to your party. And it becomes this beautiful event of synchronicities and beautiful happenstances that are all divinely guided and orchestrated well beyond anything we could do.
So much so. And I've had people tell me, Amy, you know, I keep telling people, your story matters, your story is important. And they're like, well, I just feel ashamed. I feel bad. I didn't have a life like you did. And my life was good and it was quiet. And I said, no, stop right there. you are welcome to this party. In fact, it's very, very, very important that you tell your story as well. We all need to tell our stories so we can learn to interface with one another. We stop looking so much for ways that we can just pick people out and dismiss them, you know, because of religion and politics and whatever else, and just be like, well, I'm automatically dismissing you. No, we need to welcome in points of view that are different, because if we don't know that those exist, then we don't know they exist. And for someone like me, for someone else who has had a story that is that calm and peaceful and nice, I do not know that that exists if you don't tell your story. You have to, for people like me, you have to tell me that. And then I'm inspired. And then I can take some codes that you have and apply it to my life. Or if I ever do have kids, like, I know a different path exists. And then I can look to you to say, okay, what does this look like? Folks, it's important. We need to do it together. That diversity, that uniqueness, like you said, I love that you said that. Let your freak flag fly. It's fantastic. And we should. We're constantly looking for our place in the universe. Stop trying to be like every other puzzle piece. You have your own puzzle piece section that has its own little nuances. Embrace it, because then you're going to find you fit right on in by being completely different.
Yeah, you don't want your story to sound like everyone else's. You know, you got to find what your story is and who you are, and really develop that. You know, you're the writer of your story, and there is definitely one within everyone. So it's just a matter of believing in yourself, believing in your own value, and believing in the experiences that you've had. So thank you so much for being on the show. To the audience, I am going to leave everything in the links below for you to connect with Amy if you wish. And don't forget, this Saturday, January 15th, I've got my webinar on raising your frequency so that you can have energetic sovereignty and believe that you are the most powerful thing. There is nothing outside of you more powerful than you, which means you call the shots. You call the shots on your reality. And that's what this is all about. So I'm going to take you guys through that. And again, it will be recorded. So if you can't make the live, you can still sign up and you will get access to a recording. All right, guys, I love you so much. Have a wonderful evening, and I'll be back with you guys next week. Thanks again for joining me for another show on the Enlighten Up podcast. I love you guys so much for all of your continued support. So remember to raise your vibe, find your tribe, and be open to the infinite possibilities held in the mysteries that surround us all. Thanks again for sharing the show with your family and friends. And if you're new to the show and you need to find out more information about me, please head on over to my website, NicoleFrolick.com, where you can join my newsletter. And please follow me on Instagram, Telegram, and YouTube. Keep your light bright, and I'll see you next week.